Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Our top story. President Trump signs new Taiwan legislation into law. The Taiwanese are ecstatic. The Chinese Communist Party, not so much.
The United States, and indeed every other country on Earth, has the right to fashion its own relationship as it sees fit with the people of Taiwan.
French President Emmanuel Macron kicking off a three-day visit to China. This time, the President of the European Union isn't joining him. What's top of mind for Macron? To put pressure on Russia and help bring an end to the war in Ukraine, Europe says it will phase out Russian gas imports. The Trump administration prepares military strikes inside Venezuela. It's America's own backyard, but what role is China playing there? If Maduro falls, what does it mean for the Chinese regime? Prosecutors accuse Linda Sun of betraying the state of New York and advancing Beijing's agenda. We have the latest in the case against Governor Hochul's former aide. Taiwan is thankful and China upset after a move by President Trump on Wednesday. He signed into law new rules regulating interactions between the United States and Taiwan. The Taiwan Assurance Implementation Act now requires the State Department to regularly review and update guidelines on interacting with Taiwan at least once every 5 years. Taiwan says the law stands as a firm symbol of the two countries' shared values of democracy, freedom, and respect for human rights. The law has actually been in place since 2020, but the original only required guidelines to be reviewed once, not every 5 years. Taiwan's foreign minister says more frequent reviews will allow Taiwanese officials into U.S. federal agencies for meetings. This upsets Beijing. It opposes any form of official contact between the U.S. and Taiwan. Beijing calls the island the Taiwan region of China and says the Taiwan question is the first red line that must not be crossed in China-U.S. relations. This isn't the first move of its kind by the U.S. In recent years, back in 2021, under the first Trump administration, then-Secretary of State Mike Pompeo lifted restrictions on contacts between U.S. officials and their Taiwanese counterparts. This reversed limits put in place after Washington recognized Communist China half a century ago. Rick Fisher, senior fellow at the International Assessment and Strategy Center, says President Trump's move is an important step forward and that the United States needs to do more. Watch.
This is a very important step forward. China, the Chinese Communist Party, predicates its relationship with every country on Earth on the basis of that country's acceptance of the Chinese Communist Party's right to invade and commit mass murder on the island democracy of Taiwan. It is simply unacceptable. It's inhumane and violates so many American founding principles and are the heart of our democratic culture. Taiwan is, for all practical purposes, a country. Legally speaking, the United States treats Taiwan as a country, but it does not confer formal diplomatic recognition. Because the United States took the lead early on in surrendering its freedom to have its own relationship with Taiwan, all other countries have followed our example. We need to set the example now of conveying to the Chinese Communist Party that they have no right to invade and murder people on Taiwan, and that the United States, and indeed every other country on Earth, has the right to fashion its own relationship as it sees fit with the people of Taiwan.
French President Emmanuel Macron is in China. He arrived on Wednesday. Macron is hoping to attract more Chinese investment and secure market access for French exports. France and the European Union run massive trade deficits with China to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. Worth noting, Ursula von der Leyen, president of the European Union's executive arm, will not join Macron in China this time. This marks a break from tradition. In fact, on the first day of Macron's trip, the European Commission rolled out a plan to make the bloc more resilient to threats like China's rare earth export restrictions. Macron is joined by six ministers and 35 business executives from companies like Airbus. Deals are expected to be signed in the areas of energy, food, and aviation. Also top of mind is Russia's war in Ukraine. The French foreign minister says France is counting on China to persuade Russia to end the war. Macron just met with Ukrainian President Zelensky on Monday to discuss ceasefire details. China, on the other hand, wants France's support in its dispute with Japan over Taiwan. Japan's prime minister recently said Tokyo could intervene militarily if China invades Taiwan. Last week, China's top diplomat Wang Yi urged Macron's diplomatic advisor to condemn the Japanese prime minister's, quote, provocative remarks. During Macron's last visit to China in 2023, he said that European nations should not blindly follow U.S. policy on supporting Taiwan. His remarks sparked widespread controversy at the time. Macron is set to meet with Chinese leader Xi in Beijing on Thursday. The two would also visit China's southwestern city of Chengdu. Britain's prime minister and the German chancellor are set to visit China next year. And to the war in Ukraine, Europe says it will phase out Russian gas imports by 2027. The European Union announced the agreement on Wednesday, calling it a new era.
Today is indeed a historic day for our union. Last night, we reached a provisional agreement on the Commission's proposal to fully phase out Russian fossil fuels. We're turning that page, and we're turning it for good. This is the dawn of a new era. The era of Europe's full energy independence from Russia.
The agreement will include a legally binding stepwise prohibition on liquefied natural gas and pipeline gas imports from Russia. A full ban will take effect by the end of 2026 and autumn 2027, respectively. As of October, Russia accounted for 12% of EU gas imports, down from 45% before its 2022 invasion of Ukraine. Hungary, France, and Belgium are among the countries still receiving Russian gas. And NATO foreign ministers gathered in Brussels today for a one-day meeting to discuss the U.S. peace proposal to end the war in Ukraine. It remains unclear how U.S. envoys are going to bridge the gap between the two sides on basic differences, such as who keeps what territory. European officials say the road to peace will be long.
A long meeting on Tuesday between U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, President Donald Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, and Russian President Vladimir Putin, but no agreement on a peace deal. Both sides reviewed an American draft proposal to end the war. The Kremlin described the talks as constructive, but said there are still sticking points. Trump calls Venezuela's socialist leader Nicolas Maduro illegitimate and is threatening to strike cartels inside Venezuela. If Maduro falls, what does that mean for China? To dive in, we spoke with Colonel Darren Gobb, former Black Hawk helicopter pilot and battalion commander in the U.S. Army, now a geopolitical strategist. Some are concerned about the U.S. getting involved in, say, another war. Is that a legitimate concern, or is this an appropriate response given the devastation caused by opioids in the U.S.?
Well, it's a legitimate concern as far as the picture in people's minds of the U.S. sending some sort of large invasion fleet and becoming an occupying force of some type in Venezuela. That I don't think you're going to find very many people behind. However, the reality is we've been at war for a long time because of the narco-terrorists, the drug state, and Venezuela operating as really a communist ideological platform in the shape of a country that's specifically targeted at the United States, but also spreading influence across South America, attempting to control Panama. And if you want to look at who's behind that, you'll have to look to China, Iran, Muslim Brotherhood, Hamas, Hezbollah, and others. All of these people will cooperate when they know that the ultimate target is still the United States.
I want to go back to your earlier point about China, because what's been China's role here and what would a Venezuela without Maduro mean for the Chinese regime?
Well, China, first of all, would look at this as, you know, maybe a necessary opportunity to figure out who's post Maduro, because if we didn't properly influence Venezuela to have to select again a good and positive leader, and which is Venezuela's choice to make, then, well, China's going to look at this as either lost opportunity or lost footing in South America with their chief nation they've been influencing through. Or they're going to look at it as they're going to have to start over with somebody else and try to maintain the same thing. And that's the risk of toppling Maduro, is just, do you just get another guy who's just like him afterwards?
Linda Sun's husband, Chris Hu, said in the defendant's seat alongside her in court this week, prosecutors detailed how Chinese authorities allegedly made business deals with Hu as part of a quid pro quo arrangement with Sun. Sun is a former aide to two New York governors. The U.S. government accuses her of aiding Beijing while working as a state official. The allegations include blocking meetings between the New York governor and Taiwanese officials, faking documents in order to bring Chinese delegations to New York, and secretly looping a Chinese diplomat into an internal state government conference call on COVID-19. NTD's Flora Hua has the latest.
At Tuesday's hearing of Linda Sun, two spreadsheets created by Sun's husband, Chris Hu, were in the spotlight. Prosecutors allege Hu used them to track kickbacks the couple received from China. They appear to document tens of millions of dollars flowing to Hu's accounts from 2016 to 2024, all from Chinese individuals. The prosecutor's evidence suggests the couple used this money to fund their lavish life and pay for a Hawaii property worth millions of dollars. The U.S. government accuses Sun of aiding Beijing while working as a New York State official. But that's not all. Evidence details how Sun allegedly represented New York State in China multiple times. But it seems she was acting at the directive of Chinese individuals tied to the regime. Based on messages shown during the trial, prosecutors say that one individual in the chat, Zhang Fuyin, is affiliated with the CCP's United Front Work Department. The organization helps Beijing to infiltrate overseas Chinese communities to advance the CCP's agenda. In the chat, Zhang mentioned one of Sun's speeches must be finalized by Chinese officials. Prosecutors say that in return, Sun was gifted free trips to China for her, her family, and friends. On the trips, Sun's husband was granted business meetings with Chinese authorities and companies. Flora Hua, NTD News.
Coming up, an artificial intelligence showdown between the U.S. and China. What it'll take for America to come out ahead and what's at stake. More on that after the break here on China in Focus. Welcome back to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Now let's turn to the AI race between the United States and China. What will it take for the U.S. to win and what's at stake? On Tuesday, the Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee on East Asia, the Pacific and International Cybersecurity Policy held a hearing titled Countering China's Challenge to American AI Leadership. To explain, NTD's Carrie Dunst spoke to Rick DeLaTour, CEO and founder of Tower Strategy LLC and retired CIA Senior Operations Officer. Take a look.
What we have is we have China stealing intellectual property, abusing and stealing personal information and private data, and then weaponizing all that stuff with its military. So this isn't about business competition between the United States and China. This is actually China looking for AI dominance, both in a military and strategic position. The United States currently leads when it comes to chip technology and when it comes to the software and developing these things out. China does lead, however, sadly, in when it comes to energy. We just don't have enough energy in this country to generate the amount of wattage that's required to meet AI demands. This isn't something that we can wait and, you know, and sit around and hope that we somehow fix and get on the right side within the next few years. We really only have possibly 1 year or best a few months to get into that position that we need to be in.
Yeah, Rick, you bring up a lot of interesting angles and points to this complex issue. You talk about going on offense, getting the energy going, but also you talk about defense, about preventing what you've described as sort of this IP theft fusion, because that IP theft doesn't, it's not for business. It's not for the private sector. There's a fusion of their military with their private sector. So the Chinese regime, as we frequently cover on NTD, is engaged in this unconventional warfare, as you described it and as I attempted to describe it. They invest in soft power in places such as grassroots organizations in the U.S. They even do lobbying quite aggressively. So do you see that coming into play specifically as it relates to AI, or is it in other sectors of, you know, military and other things?
Yeah, absolutely right. The Chinese soft power that is executed against the United States and in every sector, from university campuses to NGOs and grassroots movements, and even lobbying here in D.C. I'm proud to say, as a lobbyist, I accept no money from the PRC. What you see is they muddle the waters and try to refocus the attention to their benefit. So, for example, the push and argument for overregulation of AI technologies and expansion of AI, or the overstressing of environmental concerns regarding AI, a lot of those efforts are straight out of the Chinese playbook to slow us down, to keep us from catching up and making the advancements we certainly need to make. At the university campus level, a lot of that technology, as we know, the DOJ consistently spotlights their arrests that we've seen a significant increase of those who collaborate with the PRC in stealing technologies from the university centers and advanced laboratories. And then you have an all-out offensive on the cyber front when it comes to hacking and breaking into databases, into corporate and government databases, and stealing that information that then, as you said, goes back into China, Chinese servers, and then is weaponized to benefit the PRC.
You brought up a really interesting point around the lobbying, specifically that they're lobbying for green energies here in the U.S. as they fire up dozens of these coal-fired power plants. You said that we are behind them as it relates to the energy required to lead in AI. And you said that it's not a five-year thing, it's a one-year thing. So what are the stakes? How does AI help them achieve both their Cold War objectives as well as their kinetic war objectives?
You're absolutely right. You know, if you look at where we're at now, China currently, just to put this into perspective, China produces more solar energy than the United States produces nuclear energy, right? Within the next 5 years, China is slated to produce more solar energy than the entire energy that the United States produces. That's everything we do, nuclear, solar, diesel, gas, whatever it is. So we're not even in the same realm. You're right, they're firing up coal plants left and right, but they're really making their investments in the future in solar technologies, which they control. They control 90% of that market in the United States. That's something that we need to focus on here. We need to look at these, the component levels, the polysilicons, the modules, all the things that go into solar energy manufacturing, and bring that back to the United States and control it like it would be some sort of very critical industry, because it is that from a technical standpoint, providing large amounts of energy to these data centers, to the folks involved in AI, crypto data centers that are going to require the energy to take us to that next level. We need to focus on that. Right now, sadly, our grid is too reliant on Chinese subcomponents, where I have personally no real faith in. And also, we're just not growing and making those investments to keep up.
Well, a lot here at stake. Really appreciate all your analysis. Energy seems like one of the key ingredients for leadership. Rick De La Torre, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me.
The death toll in Hong Kong's deadliest fire in decades hit 159 on Wednesday. Victims include an infant and a 97-year-old. Residents of the only high-rise spared by last week's fire are now allowed temporary access to their homes.
Some residents of Wang Fuk Court who fled last week's deadly fire returned on Wednesday to retrieve belongings. Carrying suitcases and empty bags, those from the only block not destroyed in the inferno were escorted by government staff and given 90 minutes to pack. Seven other blocks were engulfed by the 40-hour fire, and authorities have not said when residents can return as evidence is collected for a criminal probe. The government said more than 2,600 residents have been put in temporary accommodation, with over 1,000 staying in hostels, camps or hotel rooms. Over 1,600 more have moved into transitional housing units. Meanwhile, mourners gathered near the charred complex, laying flowers and offerings as police victim identification teams continued their work. Along with scores dead, many people remain missing, and recovery in the worst hit areas could take weeks.
It's a catastrophe that nobody wanted to happen, and it could have been avoid it if the rules and regulations are really strictly execute it and regulate it, basically. I think justice is number one. I think there's no negotiation. Justice and really, really justice for the victims. And I think the entire population in Hong Kong would love to have the truth and the justice to be told.
Police have arrested more than 20 people for suspected manslaughter, while an anti-corruption body is also investigating. Residents who escaped the blaze must now try to get their lives back on track. Yet the overwhelming sense of loss has given way to helplessness.
I hope those who have passed away may rest in peace. For those who are still alive, I hope they can be a bit braver in facing everything. I want to send my blessings to the living. And to those who have died, I wish them a smooth journey. In the end, everything could be summed up in four words, a tragedy beyond words.
That's all for today's China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. If you have any feedback on the show or have something you'd like to see us cover, send us an email at chinainfocus@ntd.com. We'd love to hear from you. For round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for watching. See you tomorrow.